service.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hey guys, this is Jake, and I want to tell you about a brand new podcast from my company Double Elvis in collaboration with Volume.com called The Singer's Talk. This show is based on the book of the same name written by Jason Thomas Gordon, the singer and drummer for the LA rock band King Size. And just like the book, The Singer Talk podcast features in-depth, illuminating conversations with some of the most iconic singers of all time, discussing the one thing they're never asked about, their voices. So whether you're a singer or a music fan, you're going to get a wild inside look at how your favorite vocalists approach singing live and in the studio. This is a fascinating podcast. These are raw, intimate conversations with incredible artists like Thom Yorke, Norah Jones, Roger Daltrey, Geddy Lee, and so many more. Also, interviews with bandmates and producers of singers that are no longer with us, like Prince, Janis Joplin, Chris Cornell, and Nina Simone. That's The Singer's Talk. You can search for it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you know the drill, wherever you get your podcasts. Give it a follow or check it out on volume.com/The Singer's Talk. Disgraceland is brought to you by Disgraceland All Access. Disgraceland All Access membership is your chance to support the show and get ad-free listening, an exclusive scripted episode every month, and exclusive bonus content every week, plus access to an always-on chat with me and your fellow discos. Visit disgracelandpod.com/membership and sign up today. Hey guys, thanks for checking out this bonus episode. Before we get into it, I wanted to fill you in on all the great content, as usual, that we've got going on for you this week. Here in Disgraceland, we just dropped our brand new episode on The Clash. We've got a Rewind episode coming tomorrow on Studio 54. Over in the Badlands feed, we've got a Rewind episode from the archive on John Holmes. That's in your feed right now. And another on Winona Ryder that's coming later this week as well. Our guy Chris Shiflett from the Foo Fighters has a new episode of his new show, Shred with Shifty, featuring guitarist Brent Mason. And over in the Musicland Stories feed, that's our fiction show for kids and families, we've got another brand new episode that's coming for you this week as well. All right, lots to get into, but let's do this bonus episode right now. Got some new stuff I want to talk to you guys about. I'm excited about it. Let's get into it. Hey, discos. Need a little more Disgraceland in your life? Just a touch to get you through? Yeah, me too. This is the podcast that comes after the podcast. Welcome to Disgraceland, the after party. Welcome to the Disgraceland bonus episode, a little thing we like to call the after party. This is the show after the show, the party after the party, the bridge to get you from one full episode of Disgraceland to the other, the backyard to dig into the dirt. On this episode, we are talking about, among other things, The Clash in Studio 54. And of course, your voicemails, your texts, DMs, and more. And as always, a whole lot of Rosie. All right, discos, let's get into it. All right, what is up? Welcome to the after party bonus episode this week in Disgraceland. In our main episode, we released a main new brand new episode on The Clash. a band that is near and dear to my heart, and I know it's likely the same for you guys as well. Love this band, have loved this band nearly my entire life. Nearly my entire adult life. Lots of crazy stories about the so-called only band that matters in our Clash episode this week. I got into this, obviously, in the episode, but I got into it over on Instagram as well. They found the band found themselves charged with terrorism in London, chased out of Jamaica by drug kingpins, a very scary moment. And then, you know, two main set pieces we focus on in this episode. First is the legendary set of shows that The Clash did at Bond International Casino in Times Square back in May and June of 1981. Band was booked to play 7 shows there, but greedy promoters, this is fascinating. This would never happen today, I don't think. I mean, it would happen. It would just happen in a different way using technology to their advantage. But basically what happened was these greedy New York City promoters oversold every show. I can't recall if it was 7 or 8 shows off the top of my head here, but every show that The Clash had planned to do, they oversold them. And there was basically all these kids who were going to get shut out and weren't going to be able to go to the show. They had paid money and they weren't going to be able to attend. So The Clash, being the righteous dudes that they were, decided they were going to just keep playing shows until every kid got in to see the band. And it ended up being like 17 total shows or something like that. Just really fascinating. So that's a big piece of the story. On Instagram, we get into, you know, beyond the podcast, we get into, we did a little video on some of the artists that opened for The Clash, some of the hip hop artists that Joe Strummer was into that he gave a platform to in the opening slots. And there's this really neat Robert De Niro, Martin Scorsese anecdote as well. We talk about the second set piece in The Clash story from our full episode was this piece here. This is fascinating. It's still hard for me to believe. But when The Clash were at the height of their fame, Joe Strummer disappeared. No one knew where he was. And at the moment of Combat Rock coming out, which was a huge album for them, Joe Strummer's just gone. No one knows where he is. And the reason why he was missing is fascinating. So you can hear all these stories and more in this week's episode of Disgraceland on The Clash. That's in your feeds right now. If you have heard the episode, let me know what you think, 617-906-6638. And if you have not heard it, get it into your ears. The Clash are a fascinating group, mold-breaking band, one of the singular pop groups. And I use that word on purpose, pop, because they ended up going from punk to pop. And I don't mean pop punk. I mean, they transcended where they had started, punk rock, and became something completely different with the album I mentioned a couple minutes ago, Combat Rock. And this is part of the interesting story of The Clash. I don't say that they became pop in a despair. I don't mean to be disparaging when I say that. I'm not at all. I bring it up because it's interesting to me. When I think about The Clash and I think about the story we just told, and I think about the intentions that Joe Strummer had when he started that band, you know, you got to think like The Clash, you know, there's an interesting comp between The Clash and Public Enemy, where you have the highly sort of mission-driven efforts of one artist in the band, Joe Strummer, and then you sort of have not a completely different, but a slightly different reason to be from the I don't want to say side guy, but the other songwriter, who is Mick Jones in the band. Now, Joe Strummer, obviously political. Mick Jones, very pop oriented. And I see this comp with Public Enemy, where you have Chuck D, who's very obviously political, and Flavor Flav, who's kind of the foil. Not that Mick Jones was a foil, but he definitely softened out the hard edges of Joe Strummer. And if Mick Jones were not in the band and not lending all of those pop songwriting sensibilities to the group, they wouldn't have been the band that they were. And they wouldn't have been on the trajectory that they were. And they wouldn't have started as they started, and they wouldn't have had the impact they had, and they wouldn't have ended as they had ended. And this happens with a lot of bands. The Clash started out as this one thing, this heavily mission-driven band that was all about authenticity, all about bringing the truth, okay? 3 chords in the truth. And as they got bigger, and as they needed to stay bigger, to continue to float the boat that they had built, their mission, they got off course, and this ate at Joe Strummer. And they needed to continue to grow, as most endeavors do, or you get swallowed up. But that ended up cutting right to the heart of what they were trying to do, and not in a good way, and undercutting what they were trying to do. In other words, the bigger they got, the less they were able to stay on course. And this ate at Joe Strummer. I think it ate at Mick Jones in a way, and there was always that great tension between the two. And ultimately, it's what drove them apart. And there are so many stories like this in pop music. And if you look at, everyone from Nirvana to Bob Dylan, there are very few that figure out how to maintain the parts of their original mission that can transcend the group, the artist, into a different phase of their career, both creatively, personally. It's very hard to do. It's very hard to make that jump. And The Clash couldn't do it. And they broke up at, I would say, the height of their fame, really, after Combat Rock. The irony is, with all that great songwriting tension between Joe Strummer and Mick Jones, the irony is that one of their biggest hits, Rock the Casbah, was written by their by their drummer, Topper, which is just amazing. I didn't know that until we got into the research for this. It's very interesting to me. But all this is to say, you know, it kind of made me think about The Beatles. And The Beatles are a singular band for lots of reasons, but not least of which is the fact that they stopped touring. This is a famous thing that they did. Everyone knows this. They stopped touring and they just became a studio band. It's something that would never happen today. And if it did, you know, kudos to someone who could pull it off. But because they were able to do that, I feel like they were able to sustain what was their mission for much longer than they would have been had they just been doing the regular artist, go make a record, go out on the road cycle that all these bands get caught up in. And the Beatles, I feel like, you know, they just constantly were on the rise until they weren't. They never really had that dip. And as soon as things stopped working, they stopped working. And, you know, The Clash, I love The Clash, but there are misses in their discography. And you can hear it when you listen to the big swings that they took. And I'm not faulting them for it. But eventually the weight of it all became too much and they faded away. And we're going to get into this a little bit with Bob Dylan in the new episode we've got coming on him very shortly for you. But it's just, you know, I don't really know how to organize my thoughts around The Clash. I'm sort of, I'm seeing this take form here in real time with you guys. And it's relative to not only this band, but like I said, Bob Dylan, Beatles, others. And I'm going to keep digging into it with you guys, try to get to the bottom of it. In the meantime, 617-906-6638. Hit me up on voicemail. Hit me up on text. Let me know what you thought of this Clash episode. Let me know. Are The Clash your favorite punk band? How do you rate? We talked about our favorite 90s frontmen last week. How do you rate your sort of pioneers of punk rock? You know, if we're looking at those bands from the mid to late 70s, The Clash, The Sex Pistols, The Ramones, there's a gazillion other ones. You can throw the New York Dolls in there if you want, even though they're kind of proto-punk. Same with The Stooges. How do you rate those early punk bands? Where does The Clash sit for you? Are they number one? Do you know that story about The Clash and the Ramones, and the first time that the Ramones visited England? That's a good one. I'm not going to tell that now. I'm going to save it. 617-906-6638. Greatest punk bands. Do it. Top five punk bands for me. Okay. From the early days. You don't have to go to like Circle Jerks, Black Flag, and don't hit me with Green Day or any of that stuff. OG punk, top five OG punk bands from the 70s. Let me know. 617-906-6638. I'm going to take a quick break. Back in a minute with your voicemails and texts. Okay, listen, if you're one of the few people out there who's new to podcasts, new to Disgraceland, new to true crime, if you have not already listened to the wildly popular and hysterically funny and informative podcast, My Favorite Murder, hosted by my friends Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark on the Exactly Right Network, then what are you waiting for? You got to check out My Favorite Murder. In each episode, they're going to tell you stories about infamous serial killers, cold cases, incredible survivor stories. And listen, these guys are wildly popular for a reason. They have an incredible chemistry. They're hysterical. They're smart as all get up. And you're instantly going to feel like they're long lost friends. They've got great new episodes on the subjects I've already mentioned, but they've got this whole treasure trove of back episodes, including well-known stories from true crime and music history, like the deaths of Sid Vicious and Nancy Spungen, the murder of pop singer Selena, and now the infamous story of the Cocaine Bear. I've known Karen and Georgia since the beginning of my sort of foray into podcasting. They've been heroes of mine. I was on their podcast in March of 2022 to share my hometown story about a prison break party that I attended in high school. And they told me it was one of their most popular episodes. So you can check that out as well. Listen to My Favorite Murder wherever you listen to podcasts. Brand new episodes drop every Thursday. Hey, Discos, it's Jake here. Thank you so much for listening to Disgraceland. Your support truly means a lot to me, and it's because of you that my team and I are able to make this show. If you want more Disgraceland, if you want more regular interactions with me and the community of Disgraceland listeners, or if you simply want to listen to the show ad-free, go to disgracelandpod.com/membership. For just $5 a month, you can listen to every episode of Disgraceland ad-free. Plus, you'll get one brand new exclusive episode every month. You'll also get weekly unscripted bonus content, special audio collections, and early access to merch and events. There are two ways that you can support the show and become a member at disgracelandpod.com/membership. You can sign up using Patreon and listen to the show ad-free on Apple, Spotify, and most other major podcast platforms. And Patreon members also get access to all the other perks of membership and an always-on chat where I'll be interacting with you and diving deeper into the world of Disgraceland. But maybe you're currently an Apple Podcast subscription listener and you want to just tap into all the bonus audio content and ad-free listening that we're offering. We're also offering this membership as a premium channel on Apple Podcasts. However you choose to join, all you got to do is go to disgracelandpod.com/membership. Support the show for just $5 a month, $5, or sign up for an annual plan and get 2 months free. Come join me and your fellow discos at Disgraceland All Access by visiting disgracelandpod.com/membership. Hey, Discos, jumping in here quickly to tell you about a new giveaway that we put together especially for Disgraceland fans. Listen to this. We teamed up with our friends at Tivoli Audio and D'Angelico Guitar, two legendary brands in audio, to award one of you a prize pack that includes the all-new Tivoli Audio songbook paired with a limited edition D'Angelico electric guitar. The songbook is an incredible vintage-inspired sound system, and you can plug your D'Angelico guitar right into it. It's also got an analog EQ and a 10-hour rechargeable battery so you can take your music and your favorite podcast anywhere. Go to disgracelandcontest.com to see the prize pack and drop your email address to enter for free. Must be a U.S. resident to win. Visit disgracelandcontest.com for full details. That's disgracelandcontest.com. Rock a rolla. All right, last week we were talking about Scott Weiland and Stone Temple Pilots. We had that episode that we put out. And I put out the question, top five 90s frontmen. Got this. This is a good list. A left of center list from jsmitty757 on Instagram. Writes in, sure you had a million messages of top five 90s frontmen with the same grunge name, so I'll try to be original here. Number one, Maynard James Keenan from Tool. Number two, Brad Noel from Sublime. Number three, Les Claypool from Primus. Number four, Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day. Number five, John Popper from Blues Traveler. Really interesting list there. So freaking 90s. And interesting to me, if you look at that list, and a lot of those artists are still going. Tool is still going. Primus is still going, as far as I know. I don't think they're completely broken up. Green Day, of course, still going. Don't know about Blues Traveler. And Sublime is now still happening with Bradley Noel's kid, from what I understand. So just wanted to call that out. The 90s live on, and not just on the ankle tattoo that I got going on over here that no one needs to ever see. All right, what else we got here? 617-906-6638. Hit me up. Let's check out some voicemails and texts from you guys. All right, on the same question of favorite frontmen from the 90s. The 530 writes in, being a teen in the early 90s, it'd be too easy to pick some grunge singers, so I'll take a different route. Even though some of these singers also released albums in the 80s. Lucinda Williams, so underrated and underappreciated. That's number one. David Lowery, Cracker, Camper Van, Beethoven. Number three, Jeremy Enoch, A Sunny Day Real Estate. Four, Blake Schwarzenbach of Jawbreaker and Jets to Brazil. Not the cleanest or pretty, but he made his mark and influenced so many. And number five, Al Cisneros of Sleep and OM. His voice complements the heavy and moody tunes so well. Keep up the stellar work per usual. That is an incredible list. Incredible. And I've seen a bunch of those artists, played with some of those artists in my former life. Saw Lucinda Williams, saw a great Lucinda Williams show at the Grand Ole Opry, which is incredible. Played with David Lowery from Cracker, Camper Van Beethoven. Saw Sunny Day Real Estate's first show ever in Boston at Bill's Bar, opening up for, what was that band? Everclear. Blake Schwarzenbach of Jawbreaker and Jets to Brazil. I've never seen either. Can you believe that? I can't. And never saw Sleep either. Great list. Of those five, Lucinda, David Lowery, Jeremy Enoch, Blake, and Al, I'm putting Lucinda right where you got her, right at the top of the list. Awesome list. All right, let's keep going here. What else we got? Got this message from the Rain Man in 651 writes in, hey, Rain Man from the 507, excuse me, it's from a 651 number, but Rain Man wants to say 507, so I get it. Loyalty to your original area code. Rain Man says, I know you've had this suggestion a few times, but the Dead Kennedys would be great to hear about. Seems like you might not be the biggest fan, but that's okay. Also, maybe some bands like Fu Manchu, Caius, or Sleep. Wow, it's a second Sleep reference. Or maybe Minor Threat, Circle Jerks, Rush, Anvil, Hex, and Death, or Rodriguez. Would love to hear what you think about these. Great job on the pod. Got some heavy suggestions here from the Rain Man. I love a lot of these bands. Fu Manchu, Caius, of course. You'll be happy to know, Rain Man, that in the next episode we have coming up on Tuesday on Anthony Bourdain, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, Josh Homme of Caius and Queens of the Stone Age is heavily involved in that episode. You'll be happy to hear that. Dead Kennedys, I don't dislike Dead Kennedys. I don't love them like I love other punk bands. I was telling somebody this story yesterday because Mojo Nixon just died last week. And I had an experience with Mojo Nixon and Jello Biafro from Dead Kennedys once where I had, my band was playing South by Southwest. We had just played the Continental in Austin on South Congress. And it was one of those, you know, cattle call gigs where there's just a gazillion bands on the bill. And backstage, there was no real backstage. It was a day show and you just kind of get done playing. And backstage was sort of outside in the backyard area of the Continental. And I just walked outside and there's a little party going on out there. It was daytime and, you know, everyone's kind of day drunk at South by Southwest. This was, by the way, probably 20 years ago. And we were starting to load out our gear or something. And anyways, I walked right into this circle of like three or four dudes standing there passing a joint. And I just like walked into it and carrying my amp and someone handed me a joint and it was Jello Biafra. And so I just took a hit and I handed it to the dude next to me and it was Mojo Nixon. And I just stayed there for a couple minutes and got high with those dudes, left. And I caught the most serious, baddest, hardest, most dangerous cold I've ever had in my life. I literally thought I was going to die. I caught pneumonia. And I think Jello Biafra or Mojo Nixon gave it to me. So there's my Dead Kennedys story. Maybe someday there'll be an actual Dead Kennedys episode of Disgraceland that will be way less name-droppy. Anyhow, all right, what else we got here for text? Another suggestion, this one from the 330. Jake, quick suggestion for a show. Please consider Herb Alpert. Wow. Fame, Fortune, Troubles, Recovery, and he co-founded A&M Records. If I remember correctly, he and Jerry Moss founded A&M to protect the rights and profits for the recording artist. Rock star, best to all the Brennans. 330. Hey, 330. I didn't know anything about this. All I know is that incredibly hot Herb Alpert album cover with the whipped cream. Wow, that's fascinating. I have so many questions right now. Listen, these suggestions, though, they're great. Keep them coming. It's obvious to me, and it's been obvious to me since the beginning of this podcast, that the suggestions that you guys make are part of the fun of this show. We've definitely grown in the last few months, and there's a lot more incoming and a lot more engagement going on. And I want to find a way to formalize these suggestions, maybe do some sort of ranking, and maybe do some sort of thing where we can get to the suggestions a little bit more quickly in our production schedule. I don't know. I'm going to think on that. All right. I'm going to think on that. I'll be back to you with it. But keep the suggestions coming. In the meantime, let's check out some voicemails. What do we got here? All right. Let's check out this voicemail from the 573.
Hey, everybody. It's Tammy from the 573. Say, Jake, I was wondering, so I'm one of the original season fans, I do believe. The first one I was turned on to was the Gigi Allen one. My buddy's a huge Gigi Allen fan, and my buddy had already known about your podcast to turn me onto it, right? So I've been listening since then, and that was 2018, I believe my math is correct. But as a longtime listener, I've noticed that you're addressing a much larger audience. You've had an uptick, and I was wondering what caused that, or when did you realize that you needed to cater to the newcomers? Is it because they kept asking for episodes on people you already covered, or otherwise? I knew this was going to take off from the very beginning. This is an amazing concept, and you're doing it wonderfully. And I, for one, thank you.
All right, 573. Good. Thanks for the message. Good question. I'd push back a little on the notion that I cater to new fans. I definitely try to make everyone feel welcome, for sure. New fans. I can tell when people come in, when we get an influx of new listeners. Right now, that's happening in part because of our efforts over on Instagram. We've been releasing these 60-second videos that are just sort of like we're extracting these little anecdotes from the episodes and producing them in video format. And again, like really, really micro versions, 60-second, 90-second videos. And that's caught on. And then that, of course, grows the podcast somewhat. We don't address or try to address a larger audience. I will always dip into my personal tastes, Gigi Allen being one of them, and just things that interest me. But I'm also interested, and I've been this way my whole life, even going back to the first two seasons of Disgraceland and way before that when I was a little kid, and I've talked about it here before. I've been interested in all types of artists, excuse me. Sometimes I go way out of my comfort zone, though, to your point. Mariah Carey, I'm not very interested in Mariah Carey, but I was interested in Mariah Carey's sort of, her whole Christmas queen thing that she has going on. So it seemed like, okay, you know, thematically, let's do that around Christmas time. There's plenty of other obscure artists that I'm not into or not interested in that we cover, New Order being one of those that was heavily, heavily requested by the audience. And one thing we are changing, though, and this is because it befits authentically my interests that go beyond music. You know, we've had this sort of Badlands feed that was happening. We fucked with the Sportsland thing for a while. So obviously I'm interested in film. I'm interested in film history, Hollywood history. I'm interested in sports, a huge sports fan. But my interests go even beyond sports, Hollywood, and music. I'm interested in interesting people. And the dark stories, specifically the dark stories that surround them and what they have to fight through, the disgrace that they have to move themselves and the people around them through to make it out the other side, it creates these incredibly dramatic stories. And I've been interested in this my whole life. It's been my interest in historical fiction. It's been my interest in the authors that I've read, the poets that I've read, the artists that I've responded to. And you're going to see over the coming weeks, months, this year, that we're going to start to sprinkle in those stories with the Gigi Allens, with the Blondies, with the New Orders, and we're going to have a much more robust experience here in Disgraceland, because it's occurred to me over the last 5 years that Disgraceland is not just about music. It's about the disgrace, and it's about these interesting characters and these dark stories and what we can learn from these stories and how we can be entertained by them. And I don't think that everything has to be an after-school special. I don't think that everything has to be this serious NPR type of storytelling. This shit is entertaining. It's fun. And it's going to stay that way, whether we're talking about Gigi Allen, Blondie, Anthony Bourdain, Elon Musk, Picasso, Basquiat, pick it. Okay? We're going to get into it. And I'm going to find a way to continue to give you guys what you want, be it on the obscure side or on the bigger side. Does that answer your question? Kind of answers my question because this stuff's in my head, as you can tell, and I'm trying to figure it out here in real time. Thanks for the support. If you got someone you want to hear besides, you know, someone in the Gigi Allen vein or perhaps someone else, call back, let me know. All right. And that goes for the rest of you too. 617-906-6638. Let's do one more. Let's do this one from the 781.
Jake, what up? Your boy Ish here. Just listened to the Scott Weiland episode, and I gotta say, god damn, man, that's some good fucking storytelling. Anxiety, goosebumps, happiness, all the feels. You did an amazing job, my man, and I gotta say, one of the best yet. Keep up the good fucking work, my man. Disco.
Ish, I love you. Great, 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 great voicemail. Thank you. I'm so happy that you like that storytelling. All props to the team here at Double Elvis, Seth Lundy, who wrote that one, and Matt Bowden and Sean Cahalan and Matt Tahaney and all the guys here who did the music and audio, the scoring, Ryan Spraker, all that. Crushed it. Happy you dug it. I think I recorded last night-ish the, if you like the Scott Weiland episode, I recorded last night the Lane Staley of Alice in Chains episode. That will be out soon as well. So hopefully you dig that too. These are two to kind of go with the theme of this podcast, today's bonus episode. These are two of the most highly recommended episodes that have come from you guys. And I guess to the last caller's point, you know, I talk about how I don't try to service newcomers. I do try to service everyone, I guess. And, you know, I haven't been the biggest Scott Weiland fan. I kind of addressed that last week. But we wanted to dig in and do a good job for you guys and give you what you wanted. But I think to the last caller's point, we got to figure out a way that we can organize all of these requests and that we can make sure that you're all being satisfied, you're all getting the episodes on the subjects that you want, and that we aren't tipping the scales too heavily in one direction or the other. But just back to the point-ish, stoked that you were into that. And a lot of great responses from everyone out there in Disgraceland about Scott Weiland. So thank you guys. Glad you dug it. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a flash. All right, we are back. Listen, you're getting the Rewind episode this week. That's the Studio 4 episode. And one of my favorites. One of my favorites. Love the music in this one. Ryan Spraker fucking killed it for us. Just great, great, great job. And I love the history of disco. And, you know, I know people hate disco. The classic rock guys, the punk rock guys, some of them anyways. I don't want to generalize. But you know, disco was and is and remains one of the most subversive styles of music ever. And its history is fascinating. Where it comes from, where it came from, how it got to where it was, how it completely took over pop music. And there is great disco. I'm not just talking about the Giorgio Moroder obscure stuff. I'm talking about the hits, that Bee Gees stuff. You can't fuck with it in a vacuum, objectively, just incredible. Okay, so that's my bit on disco. I want to talk a little bit about what's coming to you guys next week. That's the Anthony Bourdain episode, okay? I haven't been this excited about an episode in a long, long time. I wrote my heart out for this one. I left fucking blood on the desk. not literally, figuratively. You're going to be into this though. I hope. This is a massive subject for me. I think it's a big subject for you guys as well. I'm a huge Anthony Bourdain fan, and there's so much here. There's so much to his story, and so much of it was already public. It was very challenging to find a unique lane into this storytelling to give you guys something new and fresh. And I really hope that we did that. I'm pumped for you to hear it. I want to talk a little bit about, obviously, his girlfriend there at the end, Aja Argento, is a huge part of this episode. She could not be. But it just got me sort of going back through her history a little bit from a creative perspective. And I watched that Abel Ferrara film, a director who I really like. And I watched the Ajay Argento film with Willem Dafoe and Christopher Walken called New Rose Hotel. And then I did a little digging on that film because that film is, I don't know what the actual definition of erotica is, but I know what the definition of pornography is. And it's somewhere around both of those. Not quite porn. It might be erotica. It's not a great film. It looks like a great film. It sounds like a great film. And I know many of you out there are going to, your hair is going to light on fire when you hear me say that it's not a great film, but just objectively, it's not. If you're looking to get off, if you're looking for something hot to get you stoked or whatever, then yeah, this is it. It's incredibly hot. But I wonder, you know, before I get to the wonder part, I was reading a little bit about the history of it and how they were trying to cast a woman in the Ajay Argento role and the role that she got, excuse me. And they had all these different women that came in and read, and then she came in and she kind of just, the role she plays is of this very powerful sex worker who has a lot of control and command over the men, seemingly more powerful men in her life. And I read this quote from somebody who was on the film set and said that's basically who she was in real life. And this is pre-Bourdain, by the way, this quote. She kind of came in and just kind of controlled everybody, Willem Dafoe included, and just kind of had her way with them, which was fascinating to read. And in the context of the Anthony Bourdain episode that I just wrote that you're going to hear next week, this film is really, really compelling and interesting. So I encourage you to seek it out. It's called New Rose Hotel. Again, not a great film, but it will entertain you. it's fucking charismatic movie stars doing charismatic movie star shit. So you can't really go wrong, even if it's not the greatest storytelling. If you get Criterion, it's on that app, but I'm sure you can find it on Apple and elsewhere. And I think Abel Ferrara's films are some of them are on YouTube. You might even get it there. New Rose Hotel. Check that out. Anthony Bourdain coming next week. I'm psyched for you guys to hear it. 617-906-6638 at DisgraceLand Pod on the socials. And look, if you're not on Instagram, what the hell are you even doing? We're doing all kinds of new shit over there every day, okay? If you want little micro versions of what you're getting in the podcast, get over there. Follow us. Check it out. We got stories on Iggy Pop that's almost got 1 million views at this point. In fact, by the time you hear this, it'll probably be at 1 million. Hendrix, who else? The Clash, of course. Michael Jackson, so many. Grateful Dead, George Harrison, Traveling Wilburys. Get in there, check that out. We're going to be pumping them out, obviously, on the regular. We got these little nostalgia pieces we're doing as well. If you're a child of the 90s, as I am, you're going to dig that. All right. I don't mean to say that I was born in the 90s. I was not, but I was formed in the 90s. How about that? 617-906-6638. Going to take a quick break, back in a flash. All right, we are back. 617-906-6638. Voicemail and text. I want to know your favorite OG pioneer punk bands. Is The Clash number one on that list? Give me five. Who are your top five? Sex Pistols, Ramones. Who are we talking about? Let me know. 617-906-6638. Voicemail and text. All right, let's recap this thing. Number one, right now in your feed, a brand new episode on The Clash. Number two, coming tomorrow, a Rewind episode on Studio 54. Number three, over in the Badlands feed, we got a Rewind episode on John Holmes and another on Winona Ryder. That's coming tomorrow. Number four, next week in Disgraceland, we launched the 2024 Icon Series of Disgraceland with a brand new episode on Anthony Bourdain. Number five, my number is 617-906-6638. Call me on the telephone or text me. Number six, remember, nobody cares about the music that you love more than you do, and well, that is a disgrace. All right, my moment of bliss in honor of this week's Rewind episode, me reading you the Billboard Hot 100 from the week of May 30th, 1981, the same week that The Clash began their incredible stand at Bond International Casino in Times Square. Number one, Bette Davis Eyes, Kim Carnes. Last week,
1. Peak position, 1. Weeks on chart, 10. Number 2. Being with you, Smokey Robinson. Last week, 2. Peak position, 2. Weeks on chart, 16. Number 3. Medley, Stars on 45. Last week, 5. Peak position, 3. Weeks on chart, 8. Number 4. Sukiyaki, A Taste of Honey. Last week, 8. Peak position, 4. Weeks on chart, 13. Weeks on chart, number 5. 11. Take It on the Road. Are We Ready? Last card, 6. Peak position, 5. Weeks on chart.
Quit talking and start mixing.
Cut it!